Time for another Tacky Talk with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy. How are you doing, Tacky?
Hey, you're doing not too bad. We're already midway through January.
I know we're going from the January thaw to the deep freeze, unfortunately.
Well, I don't know about other folks, but I've always had some minor injuries here and there. So when this massive weather shifts, my knee acts up. I have a
Trick
shoulder
knee.
acts up. Yeah, I do have one of those. And I do have some little back issues. My young days, I was in a couple of car accidents, and some of that muscular bone damage has never fully healed. And unfortunately, like we always talk about in kind of a joking way, but it's kind of a joke too, is we're kind of a little older. Some of those dings and scratches from your younger start to catch up as you're older. And suddenly I find out my left knee decides that the weather's shifting and there's some inflammation going on. But it
Fortunately, we
happens.
haven't. Yeah, oh
It's
yeah, it happens to everybody. Fortunately, we haven't had too much snow to shovel yet.
no, I was able to broom stuff off still, thankfully.
Yes,
And
I used a leaf blower actually.
That happened next door. I was like,
It
I need to do that now.
worked
Because I heard the leaf blower next door and I'm like, what's going on? And I realized, oh, it's all fluffy stuff.
Yeah, it worked out beautiful. Like, this
Yeah.
is great.
I do have one of those. I will absolutely do the next time when we have just fluff snow.
Yeah, which is rare around here. Usually it's the heavy, wet stuff.
Well, again, we all dread that. I think collectively we can speak to the fact whether you have a snow blower to carry out or a shovel, your back's going to pay the price eventually.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely. Well, things are starting to move on Beacon Hill. I've read a few stories about things happening.
Yeah, there is some life going on. Right now, actually, we were speaking on the 15th of a Thursday. The Ways and Means Committees and Administration of Finance secretaries, taking testimony, whether it be in paper format or verbal testimony from various economists and other interest groups on consensus revenue numbers and what their projections are as well. But this conversation actually did start back in December. Normally, we do hear about a large scale, like 4 hour plus type revenue consensus hearing. All experts and economists and other types of organizations that's what they do for a living is to do analysis on our economy and potential revenues, gain of revenues, losses, and job gain, job losses, GDP. I mean, all that macroeconomics for Massachusetts. It's a little bit later this year, going to January. The state's projecting $44.9 billion revenue, which is a 2.9% increase from last year. If you take out the so-called millionaire's tax, it's 44.2 million, which reduces it to 2.4% increase. You don't count the millionaire's tax. So it's still, it's not what it was. People kind of got used to the fact that right after COVID, we had all that stimulus money flowing around, and the feds put a lot of money in ARPA and all this other stuff for a couple of years, and people got like more free money from the feds. We're looking at tax revenue increases of like 5% and an even greater because we underestimated. So those days are gone. People should not gotten used to that one-time spikes caused by the federal government investment in our businesses and directly to you as taxpayers.
Right. But some of that is good, but put away, right, in the rainy day fund.
Yeah, any rainy day fund was still about $8 billion.
Yeah.
We let the governor skim a part of the interest to pay for infrastructure matching with the feds. There's no such thing as a free lunch. We actually have to match federal infrastructure money. So if
Right.
you put up 100 million, we have to put up 25 million. So we've been using some of the interest on that. But given the fact that that the Trump administration has frozen a lot of infrastructure projects, not just in Massachusetts, but nationally, that money, of course, stays in the rainy day fund, and it does
Right.
expire. It's not an indefinite program. I believe we let it go on for 5 years, and we reevaluate. So, is it distinctly possible that the rainy day fund, the interest may be minimally utilized, given the fact the feds have frozen infrastructure projects in the state?
Okay, interesting. And interest rates are not what they were either. They've come down over the past several months too.
Yeah, it's people are kind of misled by the administration about interest rates. So the short rates are anything less than 1 year, and the Federal Reserve, it does issue bonds. I'm sorry, this the Treasury Department, U.S. Treasury Department, issue bonds to pay the deficit, not just capital projects, but the deficit spent in D.C. As you guys all know, the size of the deficit they spending back on interest and principal, I know just the interest on the bonds to issue exceed the size of everything else.
The federal economy, yeah.
Yeah, basically it's bigger than like the defense budget plus Social Security and everything else. I mean,
Right.
it's insane how much the Fed is just paying in interest on debt they issue out. So on short debt, like 1 month treasury, 1 month, 2 month, 1 month, 2 months, 3 month, 6 month, 2 years, 1 year. I mean, those are tied to the Federal Reserve rate set by the Federal Reserve Bank. They set those rates. But the long bonds, anything 2 years and above, is in an open bond market, meaning that people buy and trade bonds, which then impacts your mortgage rate. So,
Right.
I had a student loan. My student loan had changed hand three different times to three different banks. And just so you all know, I did at the very end during the Biden administration take advantage of the public service forgiveness work because I work in public service. Well, I'm in 30 years of public service at this point. So, like the administrations, Bush W administration, as well as the Obama administration, and just and Trump administration made it impossible for public servants to utilize the forgiveness program, no matter how many years you had, and it's minimum 10. So I'm into 30. So the Biden administration actually cleaned it up. So I had to move my loans a fourth time. This time was voluntarily. We'd see if I could get in, see if I could qualify for that forgiveness program. So thankfully I did. But my loans, student loans, for example, has been sold multiple times. I'm sure people have home mortgages that started in a smaller bank. The bank doesn't exist anymore. Somebody must listening must have experienced this. It has been sold to another bank. And as a result, that's how the one of the ways, there's other ways too, but one of the ways the bond market works is that there's people buying and selling your mortgages, which is a loan, which then dictates the market rate for loans of 2 years or greater.
Typically it's what, 15 or 30 year mortgage, right?
Yeah, and that Federal Reserve has zero control over that matter. Short-term borrowing impacts your credit cards. And it impacts the ability for banks to loan money from the Federal Reserve itself, and also interbank transfers regarding moving money among themselves and the interest rate involved. And like if you take a car loan, for example, that has more of an impact on these short rates because many people's car loans don't go more than 5 years.
Okay, so what does the state do now that it has this kind of working number for revenue?
Well, it allows us to build a budget around it. I remind
Gotcha.
folks again, by state constitution, we are not allowed to deficit spend. It has to be a balanced budget. Our choice is to find money or cut. It's pretty basic in our world, unlike the federal government. Obviously, I get a lot of constituent calls and requests that spend money, spend money, spend money. You'd be surprised how many calls I get to spend money.
No, I wouldn't be surprised. I believe
Yeah, it's easier to tell someone else to spend their money.
it.
Until you open your tax bill and suddenly,
I was just gonna say it's their money that they're spending, really.
Oh, I'm going to tell you, it's not uncommon. We have the same people telling us to spend money to open the tax bill and start complaining about the tax bill after telling the government to spend money. So yeah, you guys are probably listening, going, why should you all be surprised? I mean, this is how advocacy works, right? So we'll start crafting a tax. Sorry, crafting the FY 27 budget as we speak. The House Ways and Means Committees will probably start meetings with the House Chair Ways and Means sometime in late February, early March. Again, our schedule has never changed except for COVID, where our amendments are due before Patriots Day, the Friday before, and we start the debate on the budget the week after Patriots Day. And the Senate does their debate before Memorial Day weekend.
Sure. Well, it makes sense because April 15th is ta tax day, right? So then you have a better grasp on what's coming in.
That's 100% correct because about 60 plus to 70% of our revenue, give or take, comes in on one day. It's April 15th. So that's why when you look at our projection numbers and compare our real numbers, it becomes real dicey in the sense that we all know that it lands in one day, which happens to be only a few months away from our fiscal year ending on June 30th. And this is kind of the complexity of, how we do our budgets because since our fiscal year starts in July 1st, if December, I'm sorry, if April 15th turns to be poor, it would force to readjust our projections. And that's why this stuff isn't an exact science, right? Because you're using historical past data to try to project future revenue intake on taxes. But you don't know till you know. And I always tell people that you can anticipate anything you want, but until something actually does happen, you don't know.
That's right. Well, I mean, the pandemic's a perfect example. That hit in like what, March 2020, so that threw all the numbers into disarray.
Absolutely. And none of us could ever predict that. There's no way you could ever know. So, you're 100% correct. And we were paralyzed on the budget because we had no idea what was happening. And revenue numbers was a mess when, 15% of the population lost their jobs in 2 weeks.
That's right. Yes. It went from money coming in to a lot of money going out.
Well, yes, it went to very much nothing coming in, right? And so, it's going to be a very curious year because the Trump administration is a big part of the economy. The federal government is a big part of the economy nationally. It represents somewhere between 20 and 23% of GDP of the nation. It is actually one of the smaller percentages compared to places like France, where it's almost 40% ish
Yes, right.
GDP, or like a very weird, hard to explain economy like Argentina, which is like almost like 80% of GDP is the government.
Yeah, everybody
So
works for the government there, yeah.
yeah, it's very messed up in places like Argentina. So people have this kind of real misconception that the federal government, is overly involved in our economy. Actually, it's not really involved. We're a big population. We're number three in the world in population. We're in the top 10 per capita. We have a strong social programs at both the state and federal level. And we have the ability to sadly deficit spend at the federal level and able to borrow money. And remind folks, the GDP of this country is about $30 billion. The Chinese GDP stagnated at about 19, I'm sorry, not billion, trillion, not $30 trillion. And the Chinese are trapped in the zone about $19 trillion. They really haven't moved in 5 years that much. Decimal points aren't enough. You need like you get to have to get to a whole number. And then you're looking at the Germans at 5 trillion plus. And there's a huge gap between 30 trillion and 5 trillion.
Oh, it's a league of its own, literally.
Yeah, so despite so a lot of our challenges on costs, again, I fully recognize the challenges on costs. I have the same challenges you all do regarding going to the stock market or Stoppy or anywhere else. And hunting for the best prices as well, or cutting back on things that normally would buy, unless it's a necessity. I'm very conscious of how that also impacts the economy on spending. And back skipping to a macro number that may affect us, is the so-called trade deficit, right? Imports have declined for the first time, showing a shrinking of the trade deficit in a while. But I also remind folks if imports are going down but exports are not, it means that you and I can't pay for stuff.
That's right.
Consumers pay for the imports mostly, not all of it. Some of it may be raw material, but a lot of it is consumer goods. When imports are down, we are not paying for things, you and I, because we can't afford to.
That's it's supply and demand, right?
Yeah, so people need to understand how trade deficits work. It's not strictly a issue of manufacturing domestic economy. It's also reflective of the consumer economy in Massachusetts, not just Massachusetts, but also the nation as well. So why is that important? Because obviously we have meals tax, we have sales tax. We do have obviously import goods. If people cannot spend money because they don't have it, or they need to save because they're preparing for a rainy day, because people still remember the 08 recession, people remember COVID, they're going to be low risk regarding the use of their money. Or they may decide to save up for like one giant vacation as opposed to a lot of little trips. Everyone's different. And even then, they may try to find a way to save $2 or $3 here and there.
Yeah, it all has a cumulative effect, right?
Yeah, and try to save some money. And because people aren't clear what's going on. Unemployment's kind of stagnated. It's not really growing, but it's not really shrinking in terms of like real like percentages, right? Which also is reflective of the fact that it's hard to find a job, but people aren't leaving quickly and people aren't being fired.
I've read the term low hire, low fire, so it's kind of stagnated at the moment.
We've seen this before, right? After the Great Recession in 08. Unemployment was kind of stagnated because people weren't hiring, and new college kids couldn't find jobs. But the difference then from now is that back then they cut your salary by like 5%, expecting them to work. Today they had elevated your salaries. They're afraid to drop them because they drop them, people will go leave and just now you have problems trying to replace. So, particularly if it's skilled labor where you need that person trained, you put the investment in that person, you don't want that person to leave.
Yeah, that's true. And a lot of, older folks, myself included, aren't leaving. They're staying in the workforce.
Yes, I'm obviously a little younger than you, and but I'd like to say, as we talked about multiple times, I'm preparing for my own retirement at some stage in the game, but not today. So this all these little factors I'm talking about does impact the state, plus the coupling of stuff we have regarding tax codes, particularly at the higher income level, that we match the federal government. And, I don't know all the details, but that has an impact on our revenues for this fiscal cycle, and it definitely does for next fiscal cycle. And you guys should at this point know. I know politics, and I think everyone listening does too. You said it were tax increase. No one cares who you're increasing taxing on. They just hear the word increase.
It's true.
You may not be affected, but you don't care. You just hear the word increase.
You just grab onto that headline. That's true.
Yeah, so I think there's the policymakers in the governor's office as well as in the House and Senate, you know, going to be very careful with how they approach this. And the objective, obviously, to try to live within our means because that's what we've been doing for decades.
It's well. I'm speaking of tax credit. I read through the proposed ballot questions, and one of them is to reduce state income tax down from
Yeah.
5% to 4%.
Yeah, incremental reduction in state income tax. I mean, I've never seen a tax reduction proposal lose at the ballot.
Exactly.
Because, to be honest with you, voters don't think long term about the consequences of which. And it's up to the legislature to try to figure out how to manage ballot initiatives to try to minimize the harm that's been created by the voters in this instance regarding reduction of revenue. Because, again, they think with the federal government.
So you really kind of have to factor that in as already being approved.
I don't, not quite yet. We have so many other moving parts right now in FY27. A proposal like that won't take effect till a little later on. And as we've practiced in the past and the voters don't like it, we've also delayed implementation of ballot questions.
Oh, it's
Given,
happened several times.
yeah, we've postponed ballot question implementations because of we don't know how to handle it yet.
The cannabis law is a good example of that.
Oh, after, yeah, we did like a 6 month delay. The charge reduction, the reduction came into play in the middle of the 2003 dot-com bust, where we had a revenue drop of 10% in 3 months. So, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that's why that was suspended. The legislation suspended that. Again, people hear that, but they don't care about it. It's just how people are. I mean, I say 10% revenue drop, I have to spend this. Well, why do you have to suspend it?
Here's why. Do the
Yeah,
math yourself and you'll see.
people don't make that connection readily. You have it's just again, I don't expect people to. That's why you have elected officials that work to be educated about this stuff to try to make the best possible decisions.
Hey, speaking of cannabis, you have a bill, don't you, regarding the cannabis industry?
Yeah, we have a THC drink bill that's still in committee, that we're leaving committee until the cannabis conference committee, which has start had the first meeting yesterday. See how they're going to handle THC drinks. The federal government had authorized THC drinks through a farm bill during actually the first Trump administration. Then we saw these THC drinks make an appearance completely unregulated by the state and unregulated by the feds. No one really knows what's going on.
Oh, wow. It's Wild Wild West.
Yep, the ABCC took some action to regarding cannabis drinks, not allowing cannabis drinks to be distributed through our alcohol industry folks. But they don't have oversight over non-alcohol licensed individuals. Excuse me, long non-alcohol licensed individuals, the ABCC has no control over. And also direct sale. So the most recent federal action last year now bans, and I'm going to use that word very loosely, THC drinks, because of what it is, they kick the bucket to a regulatory level to put out regulations on THC drinks allowance or not. So that's why I use the word really loosely because it's not clear they're going to ban it or they're going to allow it, but they want to create a uniform standard of yes or no.
I see.
So this gets, speaking of uneducated electeds, Welcome to one of the problems.
Yeah.
So as a result, we're waiting for the federal government to say, well, one, are we banning it?
Right.
And two, if not, what rules are you guys applying so the states can follow along what those rules should be?
Okay. Can't the state do its own though, if it wanted to?
We can,
Yeah.
which is one of the bills I have in committee regarding
Okay.
setting up requiring it to be treated as like it's alcohol. In the Cannabis Conference Committee report, they actually have very similar language to treat cannabis drinks, THC drinks specifically, not cannabis, just THC drinks, as if they're alcohol products to follow the same chain of licensing and oversight that we do of the alcohol industry. But if the feds come up with something else, then obviously we'll try to work around whether the federal regulations are. And if it's a straight up ban, obviously makes it easy for all of us. So they actually have the end of the fiscal year, I believe, federal fiscal year, which is in October. We all know about that now because of the last shutdown. When there's another one pending in about 15 days, we're kind of short in guidance. So it's actually better for state legislatures to actually know what they're going to do before we do it, because if we do it and they do something different, then we have to go back and change it.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you though? Because I mean, it's still marijuana is still illegal at the federal level, right?
That is correct. This is welcome to one of the conflicts the feds have created for themselves.
Okay, all right.
Again, uneducated folks making decisions. You're
Okay.
100% correct. You've
It's a
hit it on the
conundrum.
head. Yep, you've hit it exactly on the head. That is the problem the
Well, at
feds.
least I understand the problem. I don't have a solution, but I understand the problem.
Yeah, I don't think they understood their own question when they're pushing this thing through Congress. Half the battle
I should
lies
have
with.
asked then.
Look, the longer I do this, I'll always admit half the problem is understanding the question.
That's very true. I mean, you can't take action unless you understand what you're acting on.
Yeah, and we're imperfect. I mean, I won't say the state legislature is perfect. We're far from perfect. We're people too. But at least even when we're not making popular decisions, we feel we're working very hard to be fully educated on what we're trying to accomplish,
Right.
and to be able to make sound decisions on being educated on what's going on. I get very nervous when you see what you just easily pointed out, conflicts in federal law regarding the fact it's banned federally, THC as a part of a banned substance. And, well, it's a state problem, but you don't provide guidance or something that they created, and now they're trying to create guidance at their level, and then we're now kind of trying to figure out what we do, because you're probably sitting at home thinking, well, just pass a law. Yeah, then all the industry folks follow our law, then the federal government changes on their front.
Right.
Then we have to change the law again after everyone already moved towards a new law. That's
Yeah.
why you should never try to do anticipatory law, because once you put a law in place, the entire industry moves with it. And then let's say in 6 months, the federal government changes everything and we have to follow their guidance. We have to come back and change the law a second time after you've all been educated on a law that's no longer valid 6 months later.
Right. Yeah. I remember that created a real problem with banks, right? Because they're federally governed, federally insured. So can Cannabis Industries Massachusetts use federally insured banks? That was another question.
That's correct,
Yeah.
right? And these are things that the greater clarity from the federal government will give us greater clarity about what we're allowed to regulate and not regulate at our level. Also keeps the industry knowing they only have to change gears once, comply. Obviously, if this doesn't affect you don't care as much. But obviously, when you're working in public policy and the legislature and in the bureaucracy in the governor's offices, it is important
Right.
because we want things to move smoothly. Or as smooth as we possibly can make it smoothly.
Right. So what's the process for your bill, Tacky? What happens from here?
Well, we're sitting on an extension report to March 18th, meaning I don't have to do anything to March 18th. We'll wait and see how the Conference Committee report comes out. We'll wait and see what the federal government does, if they accelerate the decision-making process in the federal level. It will make all lives easier. If it's addressed through the larger bill, obviously the bill I have becomes irrelevant. And the process would be study order. I would put it in study order, and the bill will no longer make any more movement because it's been addressed someplace else. So we're holding a bill in committee as a placeholder. And I've chatted with the chair, Dan Donahue, the representative from Worcester, who's chairing the conference committee for the House. And we'll wait and see how it goes. But these are kind of nuances and internal processes that is important to know, because with something else is happening with another chair committee, it is not in my best interest nor their best interest to screw up what's going on already.
Yep. No, I understand. Yeah, it's some. You really need to have a crystal ball sometimes to see what's going to go happen in the future.
Yeah, I wish someone could tell me the future,
Yeah,
right?
right.
It'd be a lot easier. It'd also be easier to play the lotto.
That's true too.
Give me that scratchy. I want that one over
That's
there.
right. That's right.
But no, this is kind of the things that inside baseball we like to talk about on the show with you, about the fact that there is different ways to collaborate. There are different ways to work together. But also, we do have some independence in the sense that where you're a chair and the committee members over that chair of the sort of the committee. The committee members, the chair has to manage. It does make your own decisions too, but you have to have a greater awareness of things around you. And of course, we have, cell phones, which makes our lives much easier. A communication would be texting or calling or whatever that's involved. So that's kind of a big part of our work of how we do things. So I'm always
Yeah.
happy that we can provide some insight inside baseball to the audience.
Yeah, it's good. It's absolutely good if folks are interested. It's not as clean cut as it might appear on the outside. It's kind of messy on the inside.
Well, you watch a lot of West Wing and 24 and political shows, you kind of assume that everything's going on. It's not that simple because every state government's different, every city government's different, every
Yeah.
municipal government's, you have board of selectmen, town meetings. Even town meetings are different depending on what town you live in.
That's true. Some are representatives, some are open town meeting. Yeah.
Everyone's very different, and some people forget county government does exist. But if you live in a state with a strong county government, it's the state government's weaker than county government. We have strong county government because a lot of
Yes.
functions on a county level.
Yes. Yeah. Places like Florida, California, good examples. Yeah.
Exactly it. So everywhere is a different conversation.
Any other bills waiting in the wings in your committee?
We've closed out a lot of our bills regarding bills filed on time. The last poll went out on Friday. We're preparing for a hearing the first week of February. I keep forgetting the date, but we're going to prepare another set of polls to go out. Right now, we're honestly just moving home petitions, which are these local liquor license requests to go over above their statutory quotas. We've been processing a lot of those bills. One of the actually interesting bill that we're going to hear is about establishing a special commission on electronic books. That's going to be heard next month. Mindy Dom, who I believe now chairs mental health and substance abuse, who is from Amherst, has run across a problem at the constituency level regarding the fact that the electronic books are subscription-based services, a number of times it was used, not a situation where physical books are bought and then you just hold on to those books, because it's a library, right? So, this becomes a real financial problem for public libraries because if it's your subscription expires after, let's say, 100 uses, then you have to resubscribe.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Might be for public school systems too.
So that'll be interesting. Hearing. It is not addressing the issue directly. It's a bill just to create a special commission on the matter.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Always something for sure to talk about.
Yeah, that's actually one of the more interesting bills that are going to be coming up, I think, that you and I honestly never thought about.
Likewise. Yeah, but here it is.
Yeah.
And as we said before, you can't talk about something unless you know about it.
100% correct. So, I
Yeah.
mean, this is another example of a representative, in this case from Amherst. They've been working on an issue and decided I need to be bumped into a level where greater researches need to be done by collaborative parties beyond just ourselves.
I'm going to ask you again about the energy affordability bill, Taggy.
The speaker's office has put out some briefings next Wednesday for all House members. We should get some more information next week. On Wednesday's my briefing to see where we are. I've been getting some emails on this stuff. I think it's only partially correct about some information that's been provided. I'm aware the Mass Taxpayers Foundation sent a massive amount of mail out to elected officials during the holiday season. We did look at the material. If you look at the dates, they try to pretend 2014 is now 2025.
Yeah.
You look at the material, folks. Remember to look at the dates. They do
Yeah.
disclose it, but they try
Yeah,
to
it is
fool you.
important.
But they try to fool you, thinking that it's today's date, not that the date back then, even though it's sitting right in front of you. It is there.
Right.
They did not hide it. It's just the way they wrote it, made it feel like it, talking about today.
Yeah, that's something easily overlook and should definitely be included in the discussion.
Well, the 2015 for a reason.
Yeah, it's 10 years is a long time.
Yeah, so they do analysis using 10-year numbers from 10 years ago and apply today's situation. So I'm seeing some of those bulk emails come in, and we do read stuff to come to us, as you can tell, and not just myself, but people in my office. And after reading in some conversation, we realize that they're not wrong on some of the data, but they're wrong on how they're presenting data because it's misrepresentative of the fact it was yesterday, not today. And when yesterday, 10 years ago.
I mean, although one thing that is accurate that is the fact that the DPU is granted permission to approve double digit rate increases.
Yeah, it is 100% correct. It is an administrative law process, is a due process method through administrative law hearings. It is a public setting. As a person that used to do administrative law hearings for the Attorney General's office, I'm very familiar with this process. I work on both gas and electric rates, where the Attorney General's objective is to keep the rates down and hold companies accountable on their expenses and their commitments. And DPU is the administrative law judge that's trying to make the balancing act between the two. And I'm not going to pretend this is not true, folks. When I was young, this DPU was once called DTE because the telecom industry was rolled in there as well, which they probably should be. It's not like it's that big part of our whatever. Well, that's a different conversation. But it was part of Office of Consumer Affairs and the Secretary of Administration and Finance. They got moved into what is now Environment and Energy by the Deval Patrick administration because there was some weird conception that that agency would have effect on energy policy. It's rate setting for utilities, not energy policy. Energy policy set by the legislature can be paid by your electric and gas bills, of which they have, DPU doesn't have a whole lot of control over stuff like that because we mandate it. So, it should really go back and stay in the Office of Consumer Affairs under the Secretary of Administration and Finance. Unfortunately, Office of Consumer Affairs is actually part of economic development now, which is also kind of crazy because, I know you're thinking what I'm thinking. The original system was set up when I was a young man.
It was they got it right the first time.
That's correct, because the quasi agencies retain independence as opposed to have to deal with policy dictates from members above. Sounds very similar to a certain federal government we're living with right now.
Yes, very much so. Yes.
Just you all think this is new. This ain't new. You just don't have an institutional memory about living through more than one of these.
Okay.
I don't run the place. I'm just a legislator. We obviously the movement of executive branch offices is really the discretion of governors. Doesn't matter who the governor is. The legislature is not inclined to often. We do fight, but we 99% of the time we understand the governor has a right to restructure government as needed for the governor to do what they need to do. It doesn't matter if Republican or Democrat.
Oh, no, that's true. That's true.
So, but if you've been around long enough and you've worked enough different administrations, you know where things used to be. And I have a perception of why things don't work because I remember how things used to work. And I think some things work better now. And obviously, some things work worse now. But no one ever consults me.
So you should always run everything by Tacky, folks. He's been around a long time.
Don't say it too loud, but I've been around a long time. I do feel it.
So what would this bill, energy affordability bill, do?
At this point, I'm not entirely clear yet. We'll see what
It
the date is.
hasn't been disclosed,
Yeah, it hasn't been disclosed. We'll get a little information on Wednesday. We'll leave my briefings at 10:30 in the morning next Wednesday, and see what they tell us about this stuff. I mean, I
This is
do.
just the House version, is that right?
That is correct. So again, people who know me in the state house and the lobbying teams and even private sector utilities and energy companies. I mean, I've been working in this area a very long time, both policy person for Michael Morrissey, as well as working the AG under Martha Coakley, sitting on the committee for 7 years as a legislator, was a vice chair of the Telecom Utilities Energy Committee for a brief moment. And of course, as consumer chair, I do not work directly on energy issues. No, I still dabble, as you can tell. I do a lot of stuff, as you all can hear, if you listen to all the different podcasts we've done on the different topics we work on. But I do still dabble. And, I was on a conference committee, was it 5 years ago now, it feels like, on one of these conference committees too. So, I'm very, appreciative for Speaker Mariano for putting on a conference committee in the past, to be able to, provide some expertise, not just because I was a chair, but also because I've been working in this policy area a very long time, and on many other policy areas too. I mean, obviously, as you all know, I'm not a one-trick pony.
Right. Yeah. No, institutional knowledge is extremely important.
Yeah, and certain policy areas I was around and more in depth working on. Some policy areas in the past, I was more of an observer than a participant. And not to pretend I knew all the inside baseball on some other policy matters, but I do tell folks, and including the speaker, right? I'm sometimes also an outside observer because I'm not in the room making decisions. It doesn't mean I'm not an observer from the outside inside the state house, which it's kind of what we do.
Yeah, no, so well, I know he's not looking for a yes man. He's looking for the truth. So, that's good to hear.
Oh no, I don't yes people,
Yeah,
and
no, I know you don't,
it does frustrate my constituents too
I'm
sometimes.
sure that's true, but better to be honest, I think. Yeah.
Well, it's just you shouldn't be. I mean, you'd rather have someone unhappy with you and be honest than lie to someone just to keep them happy.
Because eventually the truth will come out.
Yeah, and I'm not going to do this forever. We talked about this many times.
Yeah.
And like I said, you got to wake up in the morning and face yourself.
Yeah.
And also at the same time, you only leave this place with your reputation, and if you're lucky, you get a pension.
What's going on in the district these days, Jackie?
MLK Day is coming up. I didn't realize there was going to be a breakfast, to be honest with you all, until I saw the Quincy Sun. They had an ad this week. It was the last week. Last week.
I think it was in both, actually.
In both on
Yeah.
at the Elks for a morning MLK Day. I have no idea what's going on beyond me. We talked about this before. Congratulations to the council. I've seen committee assignments have been put out.
Yes.
Congratulations to all the councilors and the new committee assignments, and wish you well right out of the gate, doing a lot of important work. Obviously, I'm around, but again, I don't get too deep into city government issues because they're counselors. Yeah,
Right.
everyone elected said,
That's what they're for. That's right.
therefore, same thing with the school committee as well. So we'll see how that plays out. And again, I'm a student of politics, continue to watch. And then, other than that, there isn't a whole lot of real district things going on. I mean, at the State House at Karamatsu Day, there's a push to try to make a holiday for Fred Karamatsu in every state as a civil rights activist regarding Japanese internment camps and the federal government hiding information that proved the Japanese were not dangerous, but they left them in camps for 6 years, essentially. And,
Interesting.
it shows you how, people can be victimized to government, but if you don't remind folks they've been victims of the government being dishonest, and how will you keep that from happening again, right? I had a meeting with Chair Fiola, Economic Development Chair from Fall River area. Had a good meeting this week with her. I won't get into those what the details were, but there's some cross-pollination again of my committee of other committee chairs. So had a good conversation there. Been busy on again, you hear it saying it constantly seem like I'm trying to set up my schedule on different things going on for them. So always an ongoing process. And I have some staff changes. We are in the process of onboarding a new aide. My chief of staff, Maeve, many of you in my office have probably engaged Maeve. She's wonderful. She left me in December. So I'm having a lot of I'm having a doing something that a lot of folks that do management do. Things change in your office and you have to adjust. And my
Right.
scheduling in the office, as well as reshuffling work in the office, moving priorities around, which constituent service will always be the number one priority for the office, has to kind of change around. And onboarding. I mean, I don't expect any new person coming to my office to instantly know what's going on.
Right.
And it takes months to learn how to do constituent services, to be honest with you. It's
Speaking of
not.
institutional knowledge, she had a lot of it, yeah.
Yeah, she did. So I do miss her, and she's doing well at the Mass Office of Victim Advocates, and
Good.
that's the most important thing. So yeah, so we're doing another adjustment, not my first one, as you guys know, but people have this often misconception that legislators or politicians call an office and demand stuff and stuff happens. No, that is not how it works. And you got to teach your staff, the protocols and how to approach agencies, whether it be state government or municipal government or federal government, mostly through the congressman's office. We don't actually deal with the feds directly. But,
Right.
how do we, who's the person you talk to? How do you talk to them? You have to understand the dynamics going on. So, you go in there, guns a blazing, it generally results in the door closing.
You mentioned Fall River. That's an interesting area, the South Coast part of the state. Kind of seems to be ripe for development.
Well, there's a group that's directly impacted by the Trump administration.
That's
Part
right.
of our windmill project had an economic development component, which involved assembly of the windmills down in the Fall River, New Bedford area. They do have a deep water port. It is one of the busier ports in the East Coast, and it's in a prime location to roll out the windmills. So you want to, us in Greater Boston, we're impacted too. But there's an immediate negative impact on the South Coast as a result of the Trump administration's policy regarding windmills. It is real people and real jobs that have not been lost because of one executive order. So, I mean, some people think the feds don't affect you. It does. And in this instance, one stroke of a pen, just took away a lot of people's jobs.
And the potential for more electricity generation for the area.
And clean gen and electrical generation energy to meet our RSPS standards and other standards we're trying to reach regarding greenhouse gas emission energy. It's every time we don't do you guys who anybody listening does construction knows anytime there's a delay, it just pushes out even further when kids get the job done.
Which makes me wonder, is that going, is the achieving of the greenhouse gas emissions goal going to be extended? I think it was 2050 last I heard.
Yeah, we'll wait and see. I mean, I think a lot of this stuff you have to play it out because let's say fortunes change. I don't know how, but again, we can't predict the future. And then we'll pivot as the future changes. But right now, we deal with today. And we still have time underneath the deadlines. So immediate action isn't necessary.
All right. We have a little bit of time left. Do you want to talk about what's going on internationally, Jackie? Where do we begin?
Well, speaking of like to spend other people's money, I mean, I love the president trying to spend other corporate money. You all might know my feeling about don't like I like capitalism. I don't know about you guys, but I do like capitalism. So I mean there's a bit of like a banana republic socialist behavior where we're just going to give people money to make them happy because I want them to love me mentality. You remember the whole tariff dividend conversation?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, we'll give people money. Healthcare, we'll give people money. It is really kind of an interesting behavior, which behaves more like a socialist leader, where their solution to everything about keeping the population happy is just give them money and subsidies. So it is troubling. And again, the oil companies, I don't like them, defending those guys. But you're asking Pete, other companies, which has shareholders, which some of you may have that in your retirement funds, maybe not, but also thousands and thousands of jobs. And their money to put into a place that's very scary, insecure. And as you guys know, I know energy policy, or at least try to keep up energy policy. For Exxon, for example, to go in there to spend the amount of money that the president's asked to spend, a barrel of oil needs to be $80 to break even, which is
I can.
contrary to the president's objective to keep oil prices down.
I can see why they'd be hesitant.
Welcome to the disconnect. Right, he's trying to treat one thing. They know what it is to break even. And let's say there's a revolution in Venezuela because it is super unstable there. The money vanishes, and as they've already been burnt, they already got burnt twice by being nationalized. Basically, the state, Venezuela just bought them out at undervalued, told them go away. We're going to shoot you people. So I mean, that basically sums it up. Gunpoint negotiation, right? So. Again, it's a demonstration of the Trump administration not making two policy issues connect properly, making the false impression that oil companies are desperately trying to get that oil, which proved to be wrong and financially impractical, and trying to spend someone else's money, right? Iran is a tragedy.
Yes.
It is not the first tragedy.
No.
Well, Iran's history, these things happened before. Again, another country that uses oil money for many years to try to keep the residents there happy and satisfied so the regime continue to do whatever they want in that regime. They're running out of money because the price of oil is low and they're unable to deal with the sanctions and the two biggest importers of China and Russia. And Russia is obviously under a lot of stress. But they're dangerous. They have missiles, they have drones, they have a military. It's a country that's monstrous compared to Venezuela, geographically very difficult to get to, very far to get to. You can't just send black in helicopters of 200 folks to go get people. There's way too much space between point A and point B. Much more complicated situation. And the
Yeah.
Trump administration has now discovered it's much more complicated than it really is. Cuba's next on the list, and Colombia's next on the list.
Yep.
Cuba, again, like Venezuela, post-Soviet Union was doing okay for a while, then it stopped. Another regime that's in a bad situation regarding its population, very dependent on imports and embargo, like John F. Kennedy did. May remember that.
Sure. Yeah.
Has monster impact, but the difference now is they don't have a Soviet umbrella to protect them. And we'll see with the Russians and the Chinese. I anticipate the Chinese are going to do nothing, and they're going to look for new oil, particularly from Canada, to because the oil they need is the Venezuelan oil, which is heavy sour crude is what's called, and you can only use it for limited purposes. It's asphalt, diesel are the two big ones they use this kind of crude for, and to process natural gasoline becomes more expensive. And actually, the other one's home heating oil, but home heating oil in the United States is declining use anyway. So, and refineries on the Gulf Coast, yeah, 90% capacity, but adding 10 more percent capacity, I mean, what does it really mean in the end? And most of our oil on crude comes from Canada, and it's all in the Midwest. They don't touch the South Coast. There's no way to get that oil from the Gulf Coast, the South Coast, that whole area down there into the Middle America. There's no pipes. So the refineries are trapped in that area that does has capacity, but do we really need it? So there's a lot of interesting dynamics because I mean it's not like you can see a Russian warship make its way to the Caribbean because it's Russia. They don't have a lot of warships, as we discovered in the Ukraine war, right?
True.
And the Chinese historically has never sent warships outside their immediate sphere of influence in the Pacific. They keep it really close to land in their world. So it's unlikely you can see a Chinese warship trying to expand the power to defend their tankers out there. So it's going to be interesting how that plays out with Cuba and Colombia inside the sphere of influence of the Americans. And then you got whether an American is going to intervene in Iran, where it's a much more difficult country to engage in. And of course, now you got the Greenland issue and French. Troops have gone to Greenland as a show of support with the Dutch. And this is not our first attempt. Last time we tried to get Greenland was during after World War II when FDR was, before he passed away, was trying to buy Greenland from the Dutch because the US occupied Greenland because of fear of German occupation, utilize it as a staging ground for the US and also to cut off a German weather station. Today we have satellites and we have all this tech. Back then you had to build weather stations all over the world. And of course, for the military, the Navy, and the Air Force, particularly the Navy at the time was really the reason. You need to have weather stations all over the place to inform your naval vessels on what the situation is. And obviously, that's not as important as it used to be. Greenland's already part of NORAD, essentially. It's part of the missile defense system that we're with the Canadians on against attacks from the Arctic. So it isn't like it's a problem on that front. So you got that kind of interesting dynamic going on. And again, you have administration wants to spend a lot of money. They want telling the defense industry, how to run their business regarding shareholders buybacks and dividends. But we're going to give you $1.5 trillion. Again, spend money like water.
Right.
It's very, he did this in the first administration. It's very
Yep.
Trumpy. Republicans like to spend a lot of money. This is the hard truth of the matter. They always want to. So, yeah, that's kind of where we are with them there. So, and of course, he's going after the housing industry too. He's going after the biggest, real estate investment trust funds to try to basically force sale, to force sale their residential units to try to create more housing. But the problem is the residential units are occupied.
Right.
It doesn't solve the problem when you divest, having to divest units that are occupied. They're not
No,
sitting.
that's yeah, throwing money at a problem that doesn't exist. Yeah.
Yeah, if they're unoccupied, then you put new on the market that shifts the price. If they're occupied, it doesn't really matter. It's status quo.
Right.
And then they're using the Macs, Fannie and Sally, to the Mac and the Mays, like I say, to buy up $200 billion in mortgages, which actually is not that much money in the big picture, to be honest with you, when you're dealing with trillions of dollars of mortgage money. But at the same time, though, does anyone remember the saving and loan scandal, which is not exactly this, but the 08 financial crisis? We had to bail out those two guys as part of all this.
That's right.
So, if you're all thinking, there's a lot going on, there is. I mean, we could talk about anything from immigration to foreign affairs, but there's a lot of moving parts here that, I have a high question. They say he's a businessman capitalist. No, he's not. I mean, everything is showing he's behaving very socialistic regarding, like, let's give everybody money. That is very common tactic in regimes to try to keep a revolution from happening. We'll buy you off. Intel, again, he owns stock, and government's going to own stake in Intel, very communist. They want to, China owns pieces of all the biggest companies in China. And if China, like your company gets big enough, then China's going to move in and say, we're going to take an interest, whether you like it or not. So it's, and then of course, we'll see how the midterms go and, intrusion of privacy and all that. And, it's anti-immigration, obviously, because he's, again, reacting to one problem. And this is actually an interesting phenomenon because the presumption in life we have as humans, if one thing goes wrong, then the whole thing must be broken. This is not an uncommon experience I have with people in my life, period, not being elected, just in life. And as opposed to looking at the totality of the circumstances, whether the whole system truly is broken. And this administration reacts like, oh, one thing went wrong, may have been 40 years ago, but that means the whole system's broken. He runs a real estate business is most of his life, and he runs a trademark branding business. And of course, we know about his business failure, whether it be the airlines or the Trump casino. I mean, it doesn't matter to talk about. So if that logic's true, shouldn't he be already a failure?
Interesting.
Obviously, that's not true because he is successful in certain areas and successful in other areas. Let's be honest about this. It's very fair. But live your own life. Does that make you a failure because you made one mistake and something you're actually a professional in? Or do you look at the totality of your work?
Yeah, a lot of unknowns, a lot of unknowns for sure.
Well, honestly, let's be fair. Some things he was good at, some things he wasn't. Right? Same as any other human being. So it's interesting how his reaction to public policy is really a single moment conversation, not a totality of the situation conversation.
We could go on, but we can't because we're out of time.
Again, it's just an observation. You can agree or disagree, but it's just an observation and a personal opinion.
And folks can let you know how they feel by telling you.
Yeah, tell Joe first.
Now, tell me first. That's right.
So I'm in the State House, room 42. We are staffed, as I like to remind folks. 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. Let's also get this one out of the way too. I mean, tacky.chan, mahouse.gov, tackey.chan, mahouse.gov. And also QATV at QATV.org. If you have a question about anything, doesn't have to be anything we've talked about, whatever. If you want to talk about, my lamb recipes, I'm happy to share.
Oh, that
Yeah,
would
happy to share that. So obviously, email Joe if you want to be part of the show by providing a question. Joe, it is Joe's show in the end. We have State Representative Tacky Chan and also corresponding Instagram. Given, as you heard, I have staff changes, that really has been pushed to the secondary part of my job versus doing constituents first. Constituent services always come first. We do have statetackychan.org, a resource page. We're actually in the staff level, a conversation, and myself are conversing about what updates we should be doing down the road to provide you better information before you call us. We have melegislature.gov. I highly encourage people to look up their bills, watch the public hearings, watch the sessions. It all stream and archive, and you can read and watch at your leisure. Obviously, we hear of QATV every 1 or 2 weeks, depending on the holiday schedule, and check in with Joe every morning for his 10-minute update.
Thank you so much, Techie. Good to catch up with you. Stay warm.